Early one morning while making the rounds, I took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down. I went right home and I went to bed. I stuck at 11:44 beneath my head.
What is the beverage of choice tonight? Are you working on your typical margarita?
Absolutely. I wish I could say it was rum, but I'm just not a rum kind of girl.
No?
Bad night, freshman year of college, never got over it.
I have some fine Havana Club here brought back for me straight from Cuba in honor of the occasion. I have eschewed my typical cup of tea in honor of this conversation of debauchery we're about to have. Welcome to wherever you are. I'm Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, and you're listening to the 45th episode of the Matinee Cast, the official podcast of thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective. Every other Monday morning, I start my day to the sound of this woman's voice in my ear. And while that might sound wildly inappropriate to say about a man and a woman who are both married but not to each other, I assure you, it's true. Specifically, when I load up my iPod every other week's worth of podcasts, I have to pick a starting point. For about a year now, I've always started with the same show. The show hosted by today's guest. She is the shepherdess of the lamb. She is the brains behind Rachel's Real Reviews, and every other week she can be heard alongside the very talented Jess Rogers on the Real Insight podcast. We're across a wire to Arkansas tonight, talking to the always busy, the often drinking, and the truly awesome Rachel Thoreau. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Mm. And you yourself have been a guest on my show quite a few times.
This is true, but it just dawned on me, you're healthy.
I know.
Isn't
I know. It's crazy.
The hex is broken.
Oh, maybe.
We'll see how you feel
at
the end.
Let's make it through the episode.
Okay. In episode 45, we'll be discussing The Rum Diary. We'll be fielding some listener feedback about spoilers, and we'll be talking about our top five bad ideas. But first, let's learn more about my guest. This is Know Your Enemy. Well, Rachel was first a guest back in episode 23, almost a year ago, last October, and at that time we learned that the first film she saw was The Princess Bride, the last film she'd seen at the time was Smokin' Aces, the worst...
I'm still embarrassed by that one.
The worst film she'd ever seen, and I'm sure still to this day, it was Southland Tales, correct?
Correct.
Exactly. The essential she had not yet seen was The Godfather 2, any luck?
No on that, but I've seen a lot of others in the last year. Casablanca, finally.
Very nice. I don't feel alone, though. I'm pretty sure of all the return guests, almost none of them, and it's usually a year in between just because of my scheduling, Almost none of them have actually managed to see The Essential that they claimed the first time, so you're in good company. And the film she wished she had made was Eternal Sunshine, so now we go into the back five. Rachel, darling, what's a film you like that nobody else does?
Oh, God, I'm going to get so much crap for this, but I do not understand where all the hate for X-Men Origins Wolverine comes from. I liked it. Yeah. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I certainly liked it. I didn't think it was any worse than the third one, but people just ripped it apart.
Okay.
I don't understand. I will go ahead and tack on the fact that I was sleep deprived too when I saw it, and I haven't watched it since, so
okay.
Maybe there's something there. I would have to rewatch it and let you know for sure.
Okay. I didn't mind it. I wouldn't say I loved it.
I didn't love it. No.
No. And yeah, compared to X-Men 3, I certainly thought it was a step up. And yeah, I don't really know where the hate comes from for that film. I think the bar kind of got raised on comic book movies not long ago, and mm-hmm. and because of that everybody wants to pick all sorts of things apart. The one thing I would say about Wolverine is I thought that they really had two movies in that. I thought that you probably could have had one movie of his origin up to him leaving the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that team that was doing special ops, and I think
right,
the last
instead
time,
of just using it as an opening.
Yeah, like that I think there's a whole story there in him learning about his gift and him joining the team and everything like that. And then the second one where he's on his own, the military takes over him, gives him the actual claws and does that whole thing. Like, I thought you could have split his origin into two.
I know people complain that Wolverine against Sabretooth was kind of pointless since we both know that they survive and there was no tension. But, I mean, I still have fun watching the fights and... I don't know where all the hate for it was.
No, that's not about it. Like that's not one where you're going to get me scratching my head and saying what's
wrong
with you.
I shouldn't be too ashamed then.
No. Now, on the flip side, what's a film that everybody else, probably me, likes and you don't?
I'm going to say High Fidelity. I didn't hate
the
movie.
Wow.
I know.
Okay.
I didn't hate the movie, but by the end of it, I felt like I had gone on this journey with him just to find out that none of it was his fault. And I've known guys like that. And that's what kind of turned me off to it was I've known guys who sit around and complain about all their ex-girlfriends and all the girls are crazy. And I'm like, what is the common denominator in all of these relationships? You. And it's all their fault for why the relationship didn't work out. I will admit, I have not seen it in a few years. I probably need to rewatch it. But by the time the movie ended, I just felt like that. It was just like listening to that conversation all over again, only not able to have a rebuttal.
See, the funny thing is, the more times I watched it, the more I realized a lot of it was his fault.
Right.
So you're
but
saying
he doesn't realize
no,
that it's
okay.
his fault. That was my problem.
That was your problem with it. Oh,
he goes and
okay.
talks to all these ex-girlfriends, and by the end, he's like, yeah, not my fault. They're all crazy bitches. I mean, not like that, but, you know, that's what it kind of felt like. And I've had guy friends who are like that, and it drove me nuts.
Right. You know, his whole relationship story is, it's unfortunate because he's an ass, and he's trying not to paint himself as an ass, but he quite clearly is. I would say next time you go back to it, kind of zero in more just on them hanging out in the shop, because we amongst our group of friends, we talk a lot like they do. You know, we talk in fives, we talk in pop culture, we drop references like No Tomorrow. So that part of it is what I think might appeal to you a little bit more on rewatch that I hope you do. And you dig your music, don't you?
To a degree, not nearly as much as the guys in the movie, not nearly as much as you, but you know, I don't know if I could like spout off top five lists like they do. But, and you know, that's the thing. Every time someone talks about it, they talk about the tone of the film and those top five lists and the guys hanging out. They don't talk about the actual relationship part of the story.
Right.
And that's what kind of gets me too.
Gets like, you.
That's the actual core of the story. And nobody ever talks about it when they praise the film.
Yeah. No, he's an idiot. And I think parts of him realizes that he's an idiot by the end, but not enough of him to really make it
make him quite as redeemable as a guy.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that his whole resolution with Laura isn't strong enough to really forgive his idiocy.
Me.
Yeah,
that really bothered me.
Okay, well that was certainly unexpected. So well done.
Well, I'm glad. I wanted to surprise you. I didn't want to go over the Magnolia argument again.
Good call. what was the last film to make you cry?
50-50.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Any particular moment that's not spoilerific?
Well, I mean, it's not spoilerific to say he has a surgery,
right.
is it?
No.
Okay. At the end, when his family and friends are waiting in the waiting room during his surgery.
Right.
Is when it started, because I've been that parent waiting in a waiting room during a pretty intense surgery, not knowing the outcome. So it kind of brought all that crashing back. And I've had health problems like him. I've been on chemo, not to get too personal, not going to explain anything, but that part actually didn't bother me.
Yeah.
But it was the you know, point of view of the parent that I just started bawling. I'm just like, crap, I did not mean for that to happen.
Yeah.
I should have known it was a cancer movie, but.
Well, it's funny because the ads, they paint it really as a comedy, right? And that was kind of one of the things.
Right, they show more Seth Rogen than the parents.
Yeah,
so the whole, you know, more the Seth Rogen comedy making it lighter, and then, but no, it does get very intense at times.
It's not all medicinal marijuana.
Right, exactly. And like you said during your episode, there was a time we really didn't know if they were gonna, you
kill
know,
him all? Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah,
so.
He's going in. I'm like, he's gonna be okay, right?
Yeah, it's like you can't kill Jogo. It's not fair.
Yeah. In the movie of your life, who plays you?
I know who I'd like to play me, and that would be Kate Winslet, but I look nothing like her, and I'm definitely not British, but she can fake an American accent. So.
Yes, she can. Very well, actually.
Yeah, she's pale. She's a healthier body size than most women in Hollywood. I think she could pull me off.
I'm still giggling at she's pale. Thank you for that.
Well, she's not quite as pale as Julianne Moore, but neither am I, so.
But she's less freckled.
Yes.
So there's that. And last but not least, what film are you watching next?
Perrier's Bounty.
What?
It's an Irish movie.
Oh, okay.
It came out a year or two ago. It's a comedy, kind of a comedy of errors, I think. It's Cillian Murphy and Brendan Gleeson and Jim Broadbent.
That sounds very Irish.
Yes, very, very Irish. So Cillian Murphy is going to be the next subject for our episode, for our next episode.
Right.
For real insight, so I am stocking up on my Cillian Murphy movies, even though I've already got a pretty good basis. Deal of his catalog taken care of.
Very cool. I have not seen that, so I have no clue what you're in for. I'll just have to tune in and hear. Well, that's more about Rachel, and when I get her back in another 20 episodes or so, I'll have to come up with 5 more questions. But for now, y'all just have to make do with that. And speaking of y'all, it's time for your chance to come talk to me. Why are you shaking like a leaf? Come on, come talk to me. Please talk to me. Won't you please talk to me? So last episode, I asked specifically about this show. I asked people's take on spoilers, on whether I should get a little bit more spoilerific in the feature discussion, if we should get less spoilerific, what they thought. And the response was kind of like pulling teeth on this one.
Yeah.
But I did get some. We begin with Simon, my co-host from the Film Locker and the writer of Screen Insight. He also writes on Man I Love Films. He said, don't ruin the film completely, because there are some people who will be happy to listen to a film review pre-watch and believe that spoilers make no difference, but the spoilers will make a difference. I think to give away anything / everything within the first 30 minutes of a film, the tone, the context, character setup, and then move to a vague description of the ideas is fine, but don't ruin it completely. I think spoilers, I think about the closing 10 minutes. Review and recommend, don't ruin. There's a huge difference between analysis and review. Well, that was kind of where my brain was at when I first set up this show and how I decided to attack spoilers. So thank you, Simon, very much for telling me what I already know. Joel Bjerman says no, he does not like spoilers, as he said to me sometime in the past. If there are obvious spoilers, I avoid the show until I've had time to see the film. Now, see, that was why I actually asked the question. If somebody hasn't seen Rum Diary, I don't really foresee them listening to this episode. So that's what I'm saying. If you've already seen the show, then why am I holding back on the spoilers?
Right.
So there's that. So that's a good point, Joel. But that's my counter to that is if you've already seen the film, then I should just be able to spoil away.
Well, but there's a counter argument to that.
Well, I'm sure there is. There's still 2 or 3 more to come.
Yeah.
Leja from Eternity of Dreams said, spoilers and reviews are not good, but in a podcast, trying to say a little is just ridiculous. What's the point of a conversation? I know they can be spoiler-free, but I don't see the point. Perhaps if there is a spoiler alert, which... She's basically re-articulating exactly what led me to this question. Jake from Not Just Movies, after Leja, said, you tend to talk about your main film for, what, 20 minutes? If you listen to a 20-minute talk on a film and you haven't seen it, you waive the right to bitch about being spoiled on something. Perfect. See, that's what I'm talking about right there.
There you go.
And last but not least, Andrew from G-Man Reviews and the Unnamed Movie Podcast said, go for it. But be clear that you're going to do it. So once again, I put out a call to say, hey, what do you all think of this? And I get a complete split decision.
Of course.
What's your take?
I think that actually you can talk about the movie for a certain amount of time in general and discuss, you know, direction, acting, story, all that stuff without spoiling it. And if you feel the need to go deeper into it for those who have seen the film, then you say at that point, now we're going to spoil it, skip ahead. And, right. You know, in your notes, you put, you know, the time. So that would be a good time for them to just skip to the, you know, the top 5 section. Talk about it in general for non-spoilers for a specific amount of time and then say, this is the part where we're getting into spoilers.
Gotcha.
You may want to skip ahead.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, I think you can have the best of both worlds.
Maybe. Now, the thing is that somebody pointed out that some people, this kind of tips back to what Joel was saying, that if they're coming up to the spoiler part, they actually just stop listening. They don't skip ahead. That's just it. So somebody suggested, they said, why don't you move the review to the end of the show? I'm like, well, I could do that. That's going to throw off the whole rhythm of what I've done for almost 50 episodes.
I think that the top 5 would feel really out of place all of a sudden. Yeah, if you're doing that before the review.
There's that too. Now, I am also working on being able to add chapter stops into my show that somebody could just hit one button and jog ahead. So
right.
Maybe that'll help it. I really brought this up because I think, like, as much as I enjoy doing this thing the way I'm doing it, I think there is a place to talk about a film in completion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like being able to talk about the nuance of the end and how that relates to stuff that happened in the beginning and themes and so on and so on. And I think we're getting a little too scared of tipping off a whole movie. Like there have been some, unless it's a huge, gigantic Kaiser Soze like twist. You
what?
Know,
but who's Kaiser? No.
Yeah. Exactly. Spoilers for that Kaiser Soze movie. You know, unless it's that, I don't really see what's missing. Like, I think if somebody is interested, they might deeply listen, and it might affect their thought. I'm right. completely of the opinion that a lot of people who want to make their own mind up, who want to see it blind or write about it on their own or podcast about it on their own, they're probably not even listening until they've done their part anyway or watched it anyway. So it was just my thought. Now, of course, as I said, all of this is just completely inconclusive, so I'm left with nothing. but we'll see. I will be tweaking the show as it's coming up on its second year. So maybe this is one thing, either within Chapter Stops or moving it or doing something. Who knows?
This is yep. just a suggestion. What if you don't do the spoilers during the main show, but then do your closing credits and then talk about spoilers then?
Oh, that's actually not a bad idea. Kind of do it
I remember, I think it was an episode of the Simon and Joe show. They did that once, and they said, if you want spoilers, we're going to continue the review from the movie earlier, so
that
keep listening after the credits.
Friggin' brilliant. I might actually do that.
So, and you can just chop up, you know, you can still have the same conversation and then yeah. just edit it and then put it at the end. So
that's,
it doesn't mess up the
that point. Is a very good idea. That might be, I might try giving that a spin, especially if I get something that the ending I really think needs a discussion. Like, you know, what we're talking about today is not going to really need that kind
not
of thing.
Not really, no.
But given some of the movies that I've got in mind, that might come up. So that is something I might experiment with and see how that goes. That is a really good idea. So thank you. And if that was Simon and Joe's idea, thank them as well. Well, for my next episode, I'm kind of curious. I have found over the last few years that I'm finding out about new films from multiple avenues. I'm finding out about them from other people talking, from podcasts, from websites, from sometimes from friends. I want to know, how do you get turned on to new movies? Does somebody suggest them to you? Do you seek them out? Do you look into your favorite actor, your favorite director? Let me know. Ryan@thematinee.ca, twitter.com/matinee_ca, or facebook.com/darkmatinee. That's feedback. It's time for some new slang, and the new slang is the Rum Diary. Today, the new slang is the Rum Diary. It is written and directed by Bruce Robinson, based on the book The Rum Diary by Hunter S. Thompson. It stars Johnny Depp, Aaron Eckhart, Amber Heard, and a whole bunch of other character actors. The film is about Paul Kemp. That's Johnny Depp. He is a Hunter S. Thompson stand-in. He is a, let's say, out-of-work journalist who grows tired of writing in America, and he moves to Puerto Rico to write for the San Juan Star, and well, debauchery ensues, amongst other things. I'm almost afraid to ask because I specifically twisted your arm into this episode and B, this movie.
But I know.
Rachel Thoreau, what did you think of The Rum Diary?
I didn't hate it.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Yes, I was so excited when I walked out of the theater and I didn't want to blow my brains out. I was just so happy.
Wow.
It was a lot more coherent. For those of you who don't listen to my show, you would know that you don't know that Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas was not my cup of tea, exactly. It was just too insane for me. And I like crazy, but that was just a little, I just couldn't follow it.
It's very crazy. Like it's not that you're, and I mean this lovingly, you're not too dumb to get it. it's very literally a trip.
How does the back of your hand feel right about now?
Yeah, pretty hard. But no, you're not alone. So, as I said when I got back to you about that, that is not a classic Ryan McNeil watch it again suggestion.
Right.
You watched it once, you got what you're going to get.
Right. It's very cult, and so, you either appreciate it or you don't.
This is correct. So obviously you had some trepidation going into The Rum Diary.
Of course. It was a lot more coherent. It was definitely more the drinking side of the craziness, which I am much more accustomed to.
On air often.
Yes, yeah. Very much on air.
I see. Well, that's good. I'm glad. I was lukewarm on it. There was a lot of stuff I liked about this movie, but I kind of thought it was a little bit scattershot. If that mm-hmm. means, it just, And it's not exactly the movie's fault. You hadn't read the book, right?
No, okay. I haven't read any Thompson, actually.
Okay, actually, this is a pretty good book to read, actually. Certainly much better, more accessible than Fear and Loathing. That's for damn sure.
I bet.
The book had that same thing going on. It was his kind of debauched adventures around Puerto Rico, and you know, it had this undercurrent of the journalist abroad, and they didn't quite come together properly there. It wasn't the same sort of thing as Fear and Loathing. Fear and Loathing he wrote for Rolling Stone, and mm-hmm. And then that got published into a book. Rum Diary he had as a novel for a long, long time, and actually it didn't even get published until
98.
Yeah, it didn't get published for quite some time. It was well after his heyday is the point. And mm-hmm. so that's the kind of story it was something that a lot of publishers looked at and said, So when we come along to this movie, I too was sort of saying, and enjoying quite a lot, certainly enjoying Johnny Depp. But overall, as a movie, I was a little bit uneasy.
I liked a lot of the moments individually.
Yep.
There's some really great scenes that would have been good, you know, if you just looked them up on YouTube and saw them out of context.
Yeah.
But as a whole movie, I'm not sure it gelled as well as it should have.
No.
But it is a lot easier to follow than Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yes. Now, let's focus on the positive for a second. What did the movie do well?
It showed some craziness without going overboard, I think, like the car chase scene.
A human blowtorch is not going overboard?
No, we've all done that. Come on.
Clearly, I have not lived.
Yeah, that's stuff that I can, like, appreciate, you know? And I don't want to keep comparing it to Fear and Loathing.
We're not. Yeah, that's the last time, but
we'll... Right, stuff I can appreciate. Fear and Loathing, I couldn't appreciate.
Gotcha.
Like, the stuff they did in there, I just couldn't.
Right.
But, you know, using that, 430 proof or whatever they called it, rum, as the blowtorch to escape these very pissed off Puerto Ricans. I can appreciate that. It was funny.
You almost sound like you're speaking from experience.
Not quite. I really have not been a human blowtorch. I'm almost willing to try it.
You've hung out with angry Puerto Ricans? The other thing I'm just noticing, like the film, it looks really, really handsome.
It is very pretty.
You know, it almost, because it's set around the same time, it was reminding me of, like, Mad Men goes to Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get it. No, yeah. I see that.
Especially when everybody's dolled up, like when he's in his suit, when Amber Heard is in her more classy attire. Actually, she's dressed very classy the whole time, even though she's sort of trash. She is that, but she's always dressed very classy and carries herself very classy. It's got that very handsome 60s glossy look to the whole thing. It made me want to go to the travel agency as soon as the movie was over.
I don't want to stay at Sala's apartment.
No, I definitely don't. I might like to go visit because that looked like a part of town that has character.
Oh yeah,
and clearly the good booze. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's where you get the good stuff.
Exactly. So I thought it looked classy, and yeah, I thought I always got a laugh at the antics, like things like when they're trying to drive the car with no front seat.
That's funny.
Yeah. You know, stuff like that. It gave me an audible laugh. Which, granted, it's not that hard to make me laugh, but that kind of stuff that really really worked for me. Now another thing that really worked for me. Was my imagination, or we don't see Johnny Depp play it straight too often anymore, do we?
No. And I think Captain Jack had a lot to do with that.
I think it goes back further than that.
Oh, does it? It seems like more that maybe it's just because he's been more famous all around for Captain Jack in the last decade or so.
Yeah.
It seems just more that way.
Yeah. It's also kind of his bromance with Tim Burton, right?
Oh, God. Yes.
Like, looking through his recent movies, The Tourist, he plays it a little straight. Public Enemies, he plays it kind of straight as well. Actually, mm-hmm. if anything there, he kind of underplays himself. And Secret Window, along with Finding Neverland, is almost it for the decade. Usually he's playing, you know, he's playing pirates, or he's playing hatters, or he's playing insane barbers. So it was, for me, in this movie, it was actually really great to see him play charming, really.
He really was. I agree. I mean, he's a guy that if he walked up to me in a bar, I'd be like, okay, your place or mine. I mean, I gotta be honest.
That's going
as
on
long as he's not there. A human blowtorch. Well, yeah. And sets my place on fire.
Yeah.
But yeah, he really was. He was good looking, and for the most part, he played it straight. I saw some Captain Jack expressions in there, but that was usually when he was hungover.
Yeah.
And we all know how much Captain Jack loves the rum too, so I guess I could see where that would play in. But he did spill over a little bit into this character. But for the most part, yeah, he played pretty straight here.
Yeah. I also the other thing, of course, that he's bringing in is you can hear a little of Hunter Thompson in his voice, which of course, like, he's playing a younger version of him. So I'm not gonna like hold him out to the fire for that. I'm happy right. that I'll take him playing Hunter Thompson over him playing Michael Jackson. So that was very welcome. The other thing that I got to thinking about this film is Amber Heard, who yes. is Chanel. She's she's the lead actress. I don't really know what to make of her. I'm not sure her part doesn't really serve that much purpose. Do you think she underplayed it? She overplayed it? She was wasted? What do we think of Amber Heard in this movie?
I kept thinking she should have been Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's that's a good move. Yeah, okay.
I kept thinking she looks like her, but she's not quite as charismatic and memorable as ScarJo. So the character is definitely needed. I don't think she played it as well as she could have.
No, like,
she didn't leave an impression for me to think, I need to go see this next Amber Heard movie. I need to check out what more this girl can do.
Yeah, the only thing it's kind of funny. I looked down her list. The only thing I knew her from is she's the sick girl in Zombieland. She's the one who knocks on his door.
And that was memorable.
Yes, it was.
She has a bigger role.
Yes,
not
it was.
So much.
That's for sure. So I think it's kind of a thin part in this story. And yeah, you're right. She's doing a Scarlett Johansson impression. I think it's just an unfortunate thing of an actress who's slightly overmatched, because let's not
right.
shrug it off, because she's working opposite Johnny Depp and Aaron Eckhart, and they can usually mm-hmm. command a scene. So first of all, she's in over her head for starters, and she's not really given anything to do. So it's unfortunate. I'd kind of like to see her more in this kind of part, in something classier. Like I'd love to see her get a part on Mad Men, for instance. We brought that show up before. I think
that
she
would
could,
work.
Yeah, I think she could do something on that. But in this movie, she doesn't do too much. Yeah, like we said, I think if the film is doing anything wrong, and it's not a film problem, it's a story problem, I think that it's essential to this story. But I thought that the politically charged journalism piece of it didn't quite get the weight it deserved. Like, it felt like it was a drunken adventure and a political journalism story mashed together, but that didn't quite bake right.
I totally agree, because when it gets down to the nitty gritty with that part of the story, the political part, there didn't feel like there was a real threat anywhere. You kind of wonder what everything before was really about.
And that's the thing, is that we're not really giving away too much, but they come back to the political upheaval in both in America and in Puerto Rico within this newspaper, mm-hmm. and it's the crux of the story, and it just kind of feels like it's been drifting on the sidelines the whole time, and all of a sudden
right
now,
and they'd rather show the drunken debauchery instead.
Yeah, I thought all of a sudden they were gonna do something Hangover-esque, and that was gonna be the crux of getting out. I wasn't sure, having read this book, I wasn't sure how faithful they were going to be, and in terms of adapting it into a movie, that was probably somewhere where they could have gone somewhere a little different. I almost felt they go to Carnival,
mm-hmm.
okay, and then there's a scene like the morning after.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt like the scene the morning after kind of felt like it should have been the wrap of the movie.
Yeah,
everything that comes after that, it's great for the story in novelization form. I don't know that it necessarily worked for this film, but I've been wrong before.
Well, it did feel tacked on, and the movie did feel longer than it was.
Yeah, it's not even that long. It's 2 hours, actually.
2 hours, right. And it felt at least 2.5.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we both liked it to some degree, so we shouldn't have a too big of a problem with the next part. What, if you could take the one thing away and keep it from the Rum Diary, what's your souvenir?
The turtle.
Explain it to people, please.
And not because it's pretty.
It is very pretty.
It is very pretty. It's in the trailer, so if you watch the trailer, you'll see it. But Aaron Eckhart plays Sanderson, who is, well, he's a slick, dirty bastard, but yes, he's selling real estate in Puerto Rico and just pretty much destroying the land so people can come down and vacation there and just destroy all the natural beauty that's there by building these grand hotels and everything. Well, he's got a turtle whose shell is covered in diamonds and rubies, and I thought it was such a perfect symbol for him, for his character and what he's about.
Yep.
And I mean, sure, it's pretty and you kind of laugh at it at first, but it is a very sad picture because it perfectly encompasses what he's doing to the island.
It's a very memorable image as well. So that's a good one.
Yeah.
We spoke earlier about Amber Heard. My souvenir was the first time that Johnny Depp goes to Sanderson's house and he's looking out and he sees them at the boat. And some of his like older friends come in and it turns into one long innuendo conversation.
Oh, yeah. Part of that's in the trailer, too.
Oh, yeah. I love the way Johnny Depp played that scene. I that was worth the price of admission right there because he's just got this shit-eating grin on his face the whole time, and it is awesome. Absolutely love that. That would definitely be what I'd take away from it. So, Rachel, on a scale of 1 to 4, which I know is different from your usual 5, what do you give The Rum Diary?
I'm going to give it a 2, halfway down the middle.
Oh, okay. That's kind of strange because it sounded like you liked it more than I did.
I was focusing more on the moments I liked, but overall it did feel overly long. And part of it was I'm just glad I didn't hate it. So I think it was also expectations playing into that.
That's good.
So I cannot definitely give it more than it deserves just because I didn't hate it like I expected to.
Okay. I actually gave it a 2.5. I ultimately liked it, but it's stretching it for me. So 2.5, it's handsome. It's got some good, it's got more good stuff than it's got bad stuff, but it is very messy. So, I guess our overall take on Rum Diary is proceed with caution. And drink, if you drink before you go, or during, it might make it even better and you'll certainly.
Flasks are small. You can fit them in a pocket. You can fit them
that's
in
right.
Purse.
Yep. You'll certainly want to drink when it's done. That's for darn sure. Yes. All right. Well, that's the Rum Diary. We'll be right back after this with this week's top 5, the best of you.
Waiting for my margarita to melt some more.
Yeah, I'm waiting for my ice to melt some more as well. Actually, I'm like, they're not quite sitting in the glass right. See, this is why we drink tea on the Matinee Cast, because I don't have these kinds of problems.
I wouldn't call drinking a problem unless you're an alcoholic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's only if you admit it.
Yes, this is true. Well, if there's one thing I think we can get out of the Rum Diary, it's that hiring Hunter Thompson to work in a rum-soaked place like Puerto Rico is a bad idea. Probably about as bad as, I don't know, sending him off to Las Vegas. And
with a trunk full of drugs.
Yeah, and in both cases, paying him to do it. So in honor of Mr. Thompson, Rachel and I have decided to bounce off when we talked about betrayals in episode 44. And this is not exactly betrayals. This is something where, from the outset, we think is just a bad idea in some facet or another. So why don't you get us started? What is your first bad idea?
Well, my first one, and it's not exactly fair because the movie has not come out yet, but it is definitely the Spider-Man reboot that is due out next year with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone. They're completely starting from scratch with the origin story again, which just came out a decade ago. In fact, I think it'll be a decade when the movie hits theaters next year. And I just think it's dumb. I mean, maybe for kids who weren't old enough to see the first Spider-Man, but for all of us who did go and see it, it just feels so unnecessary, especially since it is an origin story. I mean, they're just starting from scratch. I understand the third movie was awful, which I think you guys talked about on the last episode, if I'm correct.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely agree that the third movie was just terrible. And I know nobody wanted to be a part of it again, but that doesn't mean they should just start over this soon. I mean, they could have just jumped ahead a bit and recast everybody, but not tell the exact same story over from his beginnings and then move forward. I don't know. And I've not heard anybody excited for this reboot, especially after, I mean, we've already had a trailer come out, which looked terrible. And I'm sure it'll make money, but especially the summer that The Avengers and The Dark Knight Rises come out, I think it's going to certainly be the lesser of the comic book movies next year.
Yeah. See, there's a few funny things about this. Is on the one hand, it's following a trend that started, I guess, about 5 or 6 years ago now, where if something is in trouble, just reboot it. The two barometers for this were Casino Royale and Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. Now, the cool thing about both of those movies, though, is that in each case, and especially with Batman, we'd never seen on the big screen the start of the story. So right. to take it all the way back to chapter one was novel in each case. Spider-Man, no, you're right. We saw chapter one just 10 scant years ago, which I know seems like a lifetime ago. For some of us, it is. it's really not that long in the collective conscience, especially now in the age of channels like TBS that will play Spider-Man, the first film, ad nauseum for years. They're doing that with number two right now up here. Every time I flip channels, Spider-Man 2's on.
That's insane. I think a lot of us who saw it the first time around now have kids who could probably get into it. So they're probably watching our DVDs at home of it.
Yeah.
So I don't think we really need to remake the entire thing for their generation.
See, the other funny thing is that I know that this decision is actually very much a financial decision. The Spider-Man franchise was getting too expensive, not based on effects and budget, but actually just based on talent. Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, James Franco, over the course of even just those first three films, which I think flamed out in, 2007? So over the course of 5 years, those four people alone got very, very expensive to bring in every single time. So it was a cost-cutting thing to turn it over to Mark Webb, Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, who are all much cheaper.
Who will probably eventually be as expensive as those other guys.
Correct. And if you want to just recast it every 6 or 7 years, you can do that, but you're right. You don't need to bring it back to zero.
Right. We don't have to start from point A. We know the origin story. Yeah. Just continue it. People are going to go see it no matter what, unfortunately. But I think you'd have a more interested audience if you didn't start back at the beginning.
I think so. No, you're right. It's a bad idea. Well, my first bad idea, it's kind of a bad idea with an asterisk, actually. I'm cheating. I'm already cheating. My bad idea is the obsession, I'm going to say, with 3D. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Okay, yeah, so to be fair, I am not a complete adverse to 3D. There's actually been a lot of 3D movies that I thought were really cool. How to Train Your Dragon, U2 3D. I was one of the few who really liked Avatar. But since then, there have been a lot of 3D movies and ones that were specifically shot in 3D that didn't work. And here's the thing that makes that a bad idea. Is that you take any excitement that people like you and I had for something novel at the Cineplex, and you completely squash it when it just becomes common.
Right.
So
that's not the only problem, but yeah.
Well, I know there's many. You know, the glasses, the effects, the dim projection, the extra costs. There's all kinds. But I mean, just on a base level, you took something special and you made it. You drowned us in it. You made it everywhere. You made it now to the point where movies have gone the other way and they're advertising that, hey, they're also available in 2D.
Just
in case you'd swore it off because we did this, we want to remind you, you can still see this movie. I don't know why Hollywood would have done this. I don't know why they would have taken something. Well, I do know why, because they're idiots.
They're hungry idiots. Yeah.
I don't know why they would have taken something that made money because it was very special and made it not special. I'm thinking, you know, just to my left here is a copy of The Incredibles. And you remember Syndrome? He wants to give everybody powers because when everybody's special, nobody is.
Yep.
That's what it seems like Hollywood did with 3D.
My biggest issue with 3D is the fact that if I don't see it in the theater in 3D, or even if I do, it doesn't matter. Because when I get home and I don't have my 3D TV at home with my DVD copy in my hand, I'm afraid that something's going to be missing.
Yep.
And case in point would be How to Train Your Dragon. I did not see it in the theater. Oh. And so for months and months, I heard people raving about how beautiful and how awesome this movie was. I finally get it on DVD. I'm like, that was a good movie. where is all this love? And, you know, I had people who saw it in 3D admit that the 3D really helped their praise for the movie. And they admit that seeing it on their regular 2D screen at home was a different experience. And I want to see movies how I'm going to be able to watch them at home, more or less. I mean, I understand that shrinking it down to my TV is not nearly the same, but I don't want to feel like something's missing. And that's my biggest issue with 3D.
Well, so you know, the other funny thing that goes with that, not to get too far off on a tangent here, is that the whole notion now of 3D TV, so that you can watch these films in presentation, that's also a bad idea, because you've just taken something that somebody has to get off their duff and go give you money to see and made it a home experience. Congratulations, Jim Cameron. You got everybody to come back out to the movie theater in a time where everybody's sitting at home with their Netflix and their Blu-ray and everything else. Just to congratulate you that much more, we're going to make it now so that everybody can do this at home, too.
If you want to pay the money for it.
Yeah, bad idea. Our number four is actually the same, so we'll talk about this. I might have a different take on it than you, but why don't you get us going. What is the next bad idea?
Movies based off television shows, and then on a slight tangent, the vice versa, TV shows based off movies, which aren't as common.
Okay, thankfully. So where was your line of attack for this idea?
Oh, what was I even thinking of? Well, I mean, there are several. The problem is, like, when they brought back some of the 70s shows, like Charlie's Angels and Starsky and Hutch, Dukes of Hazzard. They were mockeries of what those shows were. I'm not saying those shows don't deserve to be mocked, because I'm sure they were very 70s. I've personally never watched all of them. But, I mean, they took them to the heights of, you know, Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson mockery, which I am so against. I hate those guys so much. I hate the frat pack, if you will.
Gotcha.
Whoever all is in that group that is more or less disbanded these days.
Yeah, no kidding.
But they were just mockeries more than anything, instead of an actual something enjoyable. A lot of it came from everybody's talking about the Arrested Development possibility, and my
that's been upgraded now to a probability. We're still at a certainty, but it's a probability.
My main issue with it is they are two very different mediums, and I think that when you cross those characters over from one to the other, something is lost. Of course, there are always exceptions to the rule, and Joss Whedon is behind those. But for the most part, I just don't think they work as well.
Yeah.
And if you go either way, if you go movies to TV or TV to movies, I don't think it's the same. If something's lost, or if they go from TV to movies, they're allowed to do more, but you've watched them in a certain context of the restrictions of television all this time, unless it's like an HBO type movie, like Sex and the City and stuff, so they have no restrictions. But I think it just doesn't carry over for me.
I think of The Simpsons, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a Simpsons movie, which really was a 90-minute episode. It was a lot crazier than usually what comes up in an episode, but it was a 90-minute Simpsons episode, and it played on a bigger scale, and it seemed off. I laughed. There was a lot of things in it that I found funny. There was some stuff in it that seemed cool, but for what I've come to know and love about The Simpsons, it didn't really feel right. It's the same idea of, you know, they're talking about Arrested Development. I've actually been watching Arrested Development over the last week or two. I've been going through the DVDs again, and I can't get my brain around hanging out with these characters for 90 or 120 minutes. Because they jam so much into 22 minutes. Mm-hmm. I can't see that in, you know, times four in the dark, larger than life. It's not how I see this story. A similar one that I think is still knocking around Hollywood is 24. There's a 24 movie that's supposed to happen.
So against that, I do not. And I love the show. I watch it from literally day one, I guess you could say, hour one, up through the very end. Only missed one episode, the entire series, no joke. And went back as soon as I got the DVD copy of it. I went and watched that the first thing I did. I am very much against a movie. I mean, it's complete, especially in the context of 24, which was very specific to the hour by hour situation, it completely negates the whole point of the show.
Yeah.
By putting it into a 2-hour movie at most. I don't think a movie's going to feel the same way. No. I really don't. I think Hollywood's going to mess with it to a point where it's not our beloved 24.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, there's always exceptions to the rule, and that one would have to be the Serenity movie based off Firefly, because it was such a nice closure to Firefly that got canceled.
Yeah. Well, there's that. I think it's just, now don't get me wrong, I there is a lot of TV that I love. I don't talk about TV as much on this show and on my site, just because I don't really feel like I've bent my brain around the medium enough to really tackle it the same way I do movies. But you know, stuff like we've already mentioned Mad Men and Breaking Bad, mm-hmm. and you know, even new shows, like I was really getting into Person of Interest and American Horror Story. There's a lot of really, really great TV, but the thing is that the rules for the medium are different, and I really mm-hmm. think you're right. Hollywood needs to leave TV alone. Don't kill the golden cow. And just go on to another, make another board game into a movie, because Lord knows you love doing that.
What would The Walking Dead be if it were a movie? It would just be another zombie movie. Right. Instead of this very fleshed out television show about a post-apocalyptic world.
We're still on your turn. So what is your number three?
Thankfully, I haven't seen too many of these personally, but I do know of them. And those are shot-for-shot remakes. And yeah. I think they're just about one of the dumbest things ever. Not just in movies, but ever.
A very bad idea. Okay.
A very bad idea. In fact, I think the only one I've actually watched is the Psycho, the Gus Van Sant Psycho shot-for-shot remake. And it's just like, especially Psycho, I mean, Hitchcock, come on. How ambitious or delusional do you have to be? But you're sitting there doing a shot-for-shot remake, and then it fails because it doesn't capture what the first one did. So not only did you fail to bring that out, but you copied somebody who was highly successful with it, and you still failed.
Yeah. Did you either... did you listen to the Footloose conversation?
I did, yes. Okay,
because there was a lot... there's a lot of shot-for-shot stuff out of Footloose. It's not quite the straight pull that mm-hmm. something like Psycho is, but it's very much a direct lift with just a few things gussied up. I'd rather, you know, while I think it's admirable that you want to kind of polish it up for a new generation of fans, I don't know that they're necessarily going to your movie.
Right.
That was...
I think you need to at least breathe your own creativity into it instead of just copycatting somebody and still failing.
Yeah, no, so that's unfortunate. I will admit, I don't talk too much about trailers on this show, but mm-hmm. having only just once or twice watched the trailer for David Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, that looks very much like what I've already seen.
Oh, really? Yeah. I haven't seen the original stuff.
Right.
It's on my to-do list.
Yeah, and this was another one like... Let the Right One In, where I said, if you come this far, just leave it. Go and watch Fincher's first, then watch the other one, and then you'll see how it plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it could be close, but you're right. I don't know why somebody would do that. If you're going to adapt the story, adapt the story. Don't copy somebody else's story. Right. Well, my next bad idea, and I might get shit for this, but I don't care. my next bad idea is, I'm going to classify it as setting a syllabus. Talked to a lot of people, and I've read a lot of sites that have made themselves a watch list. And I know you sort of did that as well by saying...
goals.
Yeah. You said you want to get X amount in.
Right. But not specific named ones.
Correct. So the reason why I say this is because I think when you set yourself specific titles to get through in a specific amount of time, it becomes like school. I guess my point is, when you set yourself a watch list and when you set yourself specific titles in a specific amount of time, you don't always get out of it what you could get out of it if you were just choosing to watch them on your own. So doing something more like what you did, you know, when you just said, I want to get in, what was it, 12 classics and 6 docs?
12 classics, 6 docs, 6 foreign films for the year.
Yeah, you know, that's A, that's reasonable, and B, that's very wide open.
Right.
You know,
but though now that we're getting closer to the end of the year, I feel more like homework. Now I've got the docs taken care of. Those are done. But I just did last month's, what was supposed to be last month's classic review. I just published it today. So get on it. I am falling behind.
But that's okay. But that's not enjoy. That's not hampering your enjoyment of what you're watching. That feels like a chore because it's one more thing to do. But right. Like I would venture it more that might feel more nagging if it was 2 days after Christmas and you were still three films short.
Right. No, I am getting slower putting out the content.
That's okay.
But it's not like I feel like watching. I mean, I like watching the movies. It's when I have to sit and write about them. I know, what am I doing running a blog? But yeah. It's when I'm like, crap, I got to actually write about this thing, you know, and it's taking me a little longer to get to that part now that we're closer to the end of the year.
Yeah. So. I've noticed this just kind of listening around and watching around. I just feel that it turns into school. And people, you know, they'll watch stuff when they're not in the right mindset to watch it. And just because it's Friday and they wanted to write about it or podcast about it by Saturday. And it's admirable that you want to get, that you want to broaden your horizon and you want to get into titles. I went through this with the horror films, but that was kind of why I gave myself a month.
That's exactly what I was about to ask. Didn't you just do this yourself?
Well, I did. Yeah, no, I did, but it wasn't like it wasn't like I just went on a bender and watched them all. I had other stuff that I was doing in between. I didn't set myself a drop dead date to do it. It was still enjoyable. And I think that's the whole key, is it's a bad idea. even when I did The Shelf of Doom back in the summertime, when I did The King of Pain, I took those movies kind of one every few days.
And, you gave yourself, like, you announced that, and it was, like, 3 months later.
Oh, yeah, I gave myself a lot of time, yeah, because I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, especially if it's something that you're not really well of. I think just give yourself the best possible way for what you're, to enjoy what you're watching and for what you're watching to succeed, and then it turns into a good idea. Otherwise, it becomes homework, and it's a bad idea, and you can send your emails to ryan@thematinee.ca. What's your next one?
My next one, I'm looking at it and I just kind of realized it kind of spins off number 5, which was the Spider-Man reboot, but reboots in general when the series isn't going quite right.
Right.
But this number 2 is particularly tacked on sequels. The series from my childhood, these beloved series, Indiana Jones, Die Hard, things like that, 10, 15 years later, after they've made 3 movies, we're coming out with another sequel where we're getting the same stars, but they're older. They don't really feel like the same characters as much anymore. It feels like a way to make money or maybe try to reboot the series, but have one last go at it with our initial cast first. Because I think a lot of people were trying to say that the Indiana Jones series would be kind of handed off to Shia LaBeouf.
I hope not.
God, I hope not. But yeah, especially at the end where Indy drops his hat and he almost picks it up and Indy takes it back, you know.
Spoilers for the Crystal Skull, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Please continue.
But it's gotten to the point where I've been disappointed or just right flat out burned so many times. Not so many, but... In the few times that I've actually partaken, that I've made a new rule. If the last film in this previous series came out more than 10 years after this, what feels like a tacked on sequel, I will not go and see it in the theater. I might catch it on DVD, but I'm not going to pay good money and get excited for it and go see it in the theater. They just don't feel, again, they don't feel like they're really continuing the series, my beloved series from my childhood and my memories, which might be clouded by nostalgia, I'll admit, but I didn't go see Scream 4 in the theater because I was very much against the making of that movie because I love the original trilogy from high school and college.
How's that treating you, by the way?
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Rachel won the trivia contest over on the Film Locker, and her Blu-ray of choice was the first 3 films of the Scream franchise on Blu-ray.
And now I have a DVD with French language. Ooh. That's half right. French, half English.
That's right.
I mean, like on the cover and everything. I
forgot about that,
so
yeah.
I refuse to see the 4th one. I mean, I saw it on DVD a couple of weeks ago, and I really did like it. But that doesn't justify... Yeah, that doesn't make me feel guilty for not going to see it in the theater. No. I still think I made a good choice not to do that.
Yeah, totally. You know, actually, you know one place where I actually think about this kind of thing as well is... it's The Hobbit. When I read these, when I read the Lord of the Rings series, I read the trilogy, and then... For whatever reason, I hadn't read The Hobbit, so I went and read that after. That was a waste of time. and B, by your own rule, that I think it's going to just push it, because the last Lord of the Rings film was in 2003, And I don't think we're getting the first
Any
Hobbit.
Closer.
Well, we're not getting the first Hobbit film supposedly until 2012. Right. Maybe not even 2013, and they're splitting it into two.
Now, I don't have rules for prequels, but I may have to make some.
But that's the thing. This is, you know, it's a prequel. It's going to be a standalone prequel. It might be the kind of thing, like, don't get me wrong, I'm sure it's going to be fantastic and I'm going to love it and everything, but I've got that nagging feeling in the back of my brain of when I read those books and I took them in this order, might be a bad idea. But no, I'm totally with you. There's, for every time that we get something actually inventive, like we're getting, next year we're getting another Alien film.
I didn't even know that.
But it's, well, here's the thing though. It's not, it's supposedly, it takes place in that universe. It takes place before the events of Alien, and it's not even being billed as a prequel. Yeah. It's kind of become its own entity. If you're going to do another film to build on what is already out there, do it something like that. Or, I've heard of, here's another weird one. Spike Lee is actually making a companion film for Do the Right Thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's set 20 years on.
Right. And there are, like, there's always an exception to the rule, like Before Sunrise and Before Sunset. These movies, these action movies, these series, Die Hard, Indiana Jones, Tron, they feel like just cash grab.
Well, my next one is, it's pretty basic, and I'm probably not going to spend too much time on it just because we've talked about a lot of things here. But I'm kind of tired of casting non-actors in movies just because they're famous. This mm-hmm. goes for singers who are not just in a movie to sing. So, you know, the other day I was watching The Aviator, and there's a scene at the beginning where you see Rufus Wainwright. He's singing on the stage. He doesn't have a line. He doesn't have a scene. He's there as an entertainer. That's okay. But when you get something like Beyonce trying to act, no, right. No. We're not going to do that. Athletes, no. Wrestlers, oh, hell no. Any reality TV personality, unless they are a dancer who is there to dance, no. Went through this with Footloose. The girl in Footloose, she's not great. That's because she's a dancer. Hollywood, there are a lot of actors that you already have to choose from. If you are bored with the ones you have already chosen, just go to lunch. I guarantee you that your server is probably also an actor. And cast actors. Stop casting singers and wrestlers and athletes and politicians to be in my movies because it's just a bad idea. They can't act. They take me out of the reality that you are painting and they drop me back into my own reality, which I don't want to do. That's not what I'm paying you to do. I'm paying you to make me forget about shit for 2 hours. So, well, we're getting down towards the end here. What is your final bad idea?
You know, I can't believe even 4 years later, this still pisses me off, but it does. I saw Grindhouse 3 days before it opened at like a screening, a free screening that a friend of a friend of a friend got tickets for us and loved it from start to finish. Loved every single second of it. And then it didn't do great at the box office that weekend. And I was like, well, people just don't get it. And then Miramax decided to split them into two separate films, add more content, and re-release them. And then that's what they did with the DVD. So I had to wait until last fall to get the entire actual Grindhouse on DVD. Well, Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that they did that. Because I've seen the original, or not the original, I've seen the re-release versions with the extra content, and just everything is lost. We couldn't get the trailers in between. You had to go look them up online. It was so stupid, and it's like they didn't even really give the movie a chance after that one weekend. They're just like, oh, it didn't work, so we're gonna split it up right now.
Yeah,
and then that didn't work either. So,
well, the funny thing was, if I remember correct, and I usually do, they split them up because people didn't realize that there was a second feature. There were reports in that first weekend that people mm-hmm. were leaving after Planet Terror, not realizing that they had a whole other movie to come.
Well, that's, you know, the viewer's own stupid fault.
Well, yeah, there's that.
I really don't think you should coddle people when they're that dumb.
No.
Well, I don't think you should coddle people, period, especially moviegoers. But it took so long for me to be able to get my hands on what I saw originally. They did have it on Netflix streaming for a little while, and we were able to watch it that way. But the splitting it up was just horrible. And the people who missed out on it in the theater the first time didn't get to see it. And I think they didn't even release it that way in Europe. They didn't get to see it that way. They just got the two separate films extended. And I feel bad for anybody who didn't get to see it the way it was meant to be seen.
Because
now you can.
Yeah, well, now you can. But the thing is that because it was something special, you know, it was a lot like the only thing I've kind of seen that was like that was Che, the film with Benicio del Toro. There was a road show that went around when it was released of the whole 4-hour, 20-minute epic with an intermission. They called it like I can't remember what the hell they called it. They called it like the road show edition. And then if you didn't want to see that, usually like a week later, you could choose between part one and part two. But, you know, I'm like thinking to myself, the director intended this to be an event. Movies that we pay for nowadays, you're kind of just paying to watch them big and watch them loud. If the director wants to offer you an event, why not carry that over? And yeah, with the Grindhouse movies, I don't know that – certainly when they got to DVD, why not at least put them back together then?
Right, and they didn't for 3 years.
Well, yeah, no kidding, and we're still waiting on Kill Bill.
Right.
So
yeah.
No, that is a bad and sad idea at the same time.
But you know, I think like with most stuff on this list, it comes down to money.
Oh, of course. So my last bad idea, and mine actually weren't ranked exactly, so this isn't exactly something that really really is a burr in my saddle. But my last bad idea is movies based on video games.
Oh.
Yeah. Doom, Prince of Persia, Resident Evil, you name it. What are they working on now? They're working on a few more already. I have absolutely nothing against video games. I think they're very cool. I think there's a lot of art that goes into them, and they have come in leaps and bounds since I was a kid. That now they just it's scary good what they can do with them. However, much like what we were saying earlier with television, it's a wildly different medium, and it does not carry over into a big screen environment. So to get, you know, it seems like a waste of money to try and force franchises on me like Prince of Persia. You know, that was a big summertime release. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it probably drew in a bunch of people who play the game and enjoy the game. And then there was a whole bunch of people like you and I who sat back and said, Magic Dagger? What?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even Jake Gyllenhaal's abs and arms couldn't save that movie.
It's pretty bad. It didn't really hurt. A lot of our lists have come back to Hollywood studios making weird decisions, but you know, I can't really help it in this case because it's just something. It's not like translating a book into a film. It's not like translating a play or a TV show. It is something that is meant to be consumed and enjoyed for hours. Like you know, there was a guy at my work. He was playing one of the new Batman games, and he said something like he'd been at it for 16 or 18 hours and he still hadn't beat it. Like he was making progress, but they go on that long now. How do you take that story and possibly think that you're going to make it into a film or three films or five films, provided the first one or two or three work?
Well, I mean, that's just it. They're these big summer blockbusters that, I mean, sometimes, most often, story doesn't matter.
No.
They just want to see stuff blow up and fights and everything a summer blockbuster should encompass, according to some people. But, yeah, they're terrible. I can't think of a single movie based off a video game that I've ever enjoyed. I did have a problem with the first Resident Evil. I've never seen any of the others, though.
Right.
So, and I don't even remember that much about the first one, but I remember not hating it. Let me put it that way.
Well, it's just because it's a zombie movie, so it's already got that going for it, right?
There's that. Yeah, exactly. But Prince of Persia was just god awful.
Yeah. So, no, Hollywood, stop doing this. Also, while I'm at it, stop making your movies look like video games. You've got action movies. I want them to look like action. I don't want it to be your CG team jerking off on their laptop.
Going back to the trailer of the Spider-Man reboot.
There is a movie that I already railed about on this podcast this year that looked like it was just a complete video game with actors nancing around on nothing but green screen sets. And This is not cool, people. If I want a video game, I will play a video game. I'm not going to come to you, give you 12 or 13 bucks, and just sit there for 2 hours. Stop it. Right. It's a bad idea. I think if there's one thing we can take away from almost our entire list, like you said, it usually comes down to money.
Mm-hmm.
Which is bad.
Oh, yeah. Money's evil.
It seems like, you know, once they get the dollar signs flashing in front of their eyes, and they
can't see anything else.
They stop thinking.
Right. They can't put together a good movie or even a passable movie half the time.
That's right.
Yeah. Once they see the money, I mean, who cares what's in it? Who cares what the critics say? It's just going to, as long as it makes money, they don't care. And yeah. The problem with a lot of these that were on our list is that people are going to be curious enough to check these kinds of movies out.
Yeah.
And they're going to get that money and they're going to keep coming up with these bad ideas because they know people will see them no matter what.
That's right. Well, we might have forgotten a thing or two, so do be sure to drop me an email and remind me if I've forgotten about a bad idea or two. For now, that's it for this Matinee Cast. Come on back for episode 46 on November 21st. We'll be talking about Leo DiCaprio in J. Edgar. Now, I know you're not so fussed about the Clint Eastwood these days. Are you going to go see J. Edgar?
No, I saw the trailer and barely made it through the trailer. I did not think it looked very good. I don't like the way they've aged Leo. I don't think it looks very good, okay. The makeup. And the story doesn't look all that exciting. But above all, it looks like another Clint Eastwood movie where he's got about 30 minutes tacked on to the end where somebody should have edited it way down to a 2-hour film.
Not to get too presumptuous or anything.
No, never. Not me.
No. Rachel's site is rachelsrealreviews.com. Do you have anything coming up next week that people can look forward to?
No, not specifically for the site, but for the podcast. We did our Melissa Leo episode this last week.
And it's a doozy.
but our next one will be Cillian Murphy. We're going to have our last guest that won Quotable Quotes because we stopped that when we went to a bi-weekly show.
I do miss that.
At times I do. At times I'm like, oh, good. We don't have to come up with quotes. But so that'll be next. But otherwise, I'm just doing the same thing. You know, the reviews, the lists, the Sim screenshot come by on Saturdays. I've got those posted. I hope to do all Christmas ones in December.
Very cool. And you can find the podcast, by the way, on Podomatic or on iTunes. Just look for Real Insight, Real spelled with two E's.
Yes.
My own site is thematinee.ca for more podcasting content. You can find back episodes in the matinee.ca/podcasting. You can also find them on mypodcast.com, Blueberry, or the iTunes Music Store. They all give you ways that you can subscribe for free and get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on the Rum Diary, on how you choose your movies, and on bad ideas can be sent to ryan@thematinee.ca, facebook.com/darkmatinee, or Twitter, twitter.com/matinee_ca. Rachel does not tweet, and that is why I did not include her Twitter handle. Any last thoughts before we go? Given that it's probably going to be another 20-something episodes till we get you back.
Oh, God, another year? I really want that turtle now I'm thinking about it. It's so pretty. I think my child would end up doing very bad things.
I know what to get you and your daughter for Christmas now.
There you go. She likes very sparkly things, so I don't see the turtle lasting very long.
Very cool. Well, for Rachel Thoreau, I'm Ryan McNeil. We'll see you at the matinee.